Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Please welcome to the show this evening, Les Velez.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Would you not agree that there are times when we live our daily lives in this world that something presents itself to us that falls into the category of a mystery? My guest this evening, Les Velez, has delved deep into the world of abductees and experiencers trying to put and piece together some of these puzzle pieces that create and continue to create quite a stir and mystery in the what we would call the UFO world. Les Velez is a graduate of the University of Vermont with a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration, a U.S. Army veteran, and former VP of Lascom Engineering. In 1991, Les joined MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network, and has held the following positions: a field investigator, a training coordinator for field investigators, the assistant state director in Northern California, chairman of the Abduction Experiencer Research Committee, and team leader of the Abduction Response Team, predecessor to MUFON's Experiencer Research Team, presently holding the position of research consultant for the Experiencer Resource Team. In 1994, Les co-founded OPUS, which is the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support. Les has written a very interesting book called The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact. Les has delved into situations with very interesting mystery, which involves people being marked, having implants, being stitched up, having incisions, and also coming across aspects of writings that don't make much sense. He has been instrumental in trying to get down to the bottom of what is happening out in our mysterious world. Les has had his own experiences, which we will learn about throughout this interview. Please welcome to my show this evening, Les Velez. Well, good evening, Les, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate being here.
Well, should be a really interesting show, a very unique subject tonight, and I am glad that you're here because the expert, by the way, is in the house. So here we go. Les, you know, a lot of times what I do, and everyone knows the you know, how I do this by now, is that we start out usually with a foundation of our guest, because it's very important for people to understand that incidents of paranormal or anything extra terrestrial or anything like that, or even UFO related, doesn't always seem to happen when they're very young. And so why don't we start with what your experiences have been? When did they all start for you, and what happened with you?
Well, that's a good question. And in my case, it did happen when I was young, when I was 11 years old. And this is when I was living in Connecticut, and I was coming back in the house. It was already dark. I just fed my dog, and I noticed this object hovering over a tree line. It was self-illuminated and silent. There was no sound coming out of it. It was oval in shape, and it was slowly drifting away from me, but it scared the heck out of me. And I ran in the house and I tried to get my father to come out. And by the time he did, it was gone. Mm-hmm. And when he did come out, though, he said, well, it's probably just a beacon of light reflecting off a cloud. Mm-hmm. And I didn't buy that. And I went to the library soon thereafter and started picking up books on UFOs. And back in those days, George Adamski was the person that was quite popular with his books on his experiences on board the Venusian craft and his meetings with these Venusians. And it was fascinating. And his pictures and his books were incredible. I mean, they were some of the best UFO pictures, flying saucer pictures at that time that they were called, of course, that I've ever seen at that time. And so that got me kind of rolling in the right direction as far as my interest. But of course, you know, I got older and I kind of faded in my thought process. And I went off to college and proceeded to be a member of the ROTC program. And when I graduated and I got married at the end of graduation, I had my 6 years of duty with the Army. And so I was a field artillery officer. And so I did that for 6 years. And then in 1985, I had the opportunity to buy into a company in Northern California, in San Jose. And so I moved the family out there. Of course, my daughters were not thrilled. They were 8 and 10 at the time, and leaving their friends and where they were brought up was not a popular thing with them. And certainly they were not pleased with me. But one day I picked up the newspaper, the San Jose Mercury News, as it was called then. Now it's just the Mercury News. And Stanton Freeman, a nuclear physicist, was coming to San Jose City College to talk about UFOs and a government cover-up. And, well, that was like somebody threw a switch. And I said, oh, my goodness, I have to go see this guy. So I went there expecting to see a handful of people, but the auditorium was full. He gave an incredible lecture that really got me fired up. And on my way out in the foyer, there was a table manned by a group called MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, which is an organization that was started in 1969 by a couple of engineers. And they produce a monthly journal where they talk about their cases. And so I decided at that point that I needed to at least start to get this journal. So I signed up for that. But it wasn't very much longer than I started to feel like I needed to do something different. I needed to get more involved. And so I found out that they had a field investigator training course. And so I took that course and passed the test and everything and started to investigate cases locally in the Northern California area. And it was really quite interesting because most of the cases that I got involved with were not only sightings, but people were telling me that they had contact with non-human intelligences. And the first case that came along that way, I was rather skeptical because I was kind of a nuts and bolts kind of a guy. Mm-hmm. For many years, and because I was so interested in understanding how these things operated and who was operating them. But anyway, then the second case came along, same thing, the third case, the fourth case, the fifth case. By the end of that process, I was thoroughly, you know, believing in the fact that something significant is going on. A lot of these people, you know, we're absolutely frightened about the fact that, well, you know, they thought maybe perhaps they were going crazy. And some of them had already gone to a psychologist or a psychiatrist and found out that they didn't have a psychopathology. So if that's the case, then what? What do you do with this phenomena that's occurring with you? You know, many times these people cannot talk to family members. They can't talk to, their fellow workers. They can't talk to clergy in a lot of cases, so they're kind of trapped in this little bubble that, you know, their thoughts just keep going around and round and round. And in a lot of cases, in some cases, I mean, these people really have a difficult time, basically running their lives in a normal way, even being able to hold down jobs and things like that. So it can get pretty bad for these people.
So anyway, I'm going to jump in, Les. I want to ask you a couple questions.
Yeah, please.
So I'm going to backtrack just for a second, because California, at least from my understanding, seems to have quite a bit of activity. And not only in the northern part of California, but also from what I understand, more like the middle to even going southern, where there's been a lot of activity noted there. The individuals that reported or went to the psychologist or just to get talk about their experiences or whatnot, were they being abducted or were they being visited by something?
Well, that's a good question. Nowadays, we have multiple terminologies for this phenomena. If you've been abducted, it's generally speaking a rather negative content or connotation to it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're an experiencer, that's kind of neutral, and if you're a contactee, it's kind of positive. Yeah. So it's a broad spectrum type of a situation where you have, you know, these situations, depending upon what group you actually interact with, can be, you know, a very positive one or not so positive one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very familiar with all three of them, although I haven't had what I believe to be experiences with any one in particular. I'm very fascinated right now with this, what is it called, CE5 mm-hmm. type of, would you explain that to people regarding what
sure.
that is and how people are making contact?
Yeah, basically, it's a meditation process that Dr. Stephen Greer has been the proponent of doing these sessions where they sit and they meditate and supposedly are able to bring in these objects, you know, close by. And there's other groups that are doing very similar things. The difference between CE5 and a CE4, where CE4, this is where there's an active process going on by these entities to take people for various reasons. Whereas the CE5 is where we are initiating that contact. And so there's been cases where people have actually gone as far as bringing these entities down and being close to them and interacting with them. Paula Harris has actually been involved with a case where this craft came down and these entities came out, and so it was quite a dramatic experience for her. There's contact going on all the time, we, even if we don't recollect that we've had an experience, I firmly believe we've probably all had an experience. And reason why I say that is one day in one of the support groups, which I started to facilitate a support group after these people asked me, the people that I investigated, asked me if did I know of other people having similar experiences, and I said yes, I do. And so they said, well, we'd like to meet them, you know, I'd like to meet them. And so I said, okay, well, I started to have this meeting at my office in San Jose and on a monthly basis, and that was incredible to listen to these stories. But anyway, this one session, a person said to me, I've seen you before. And I said, oh, really? Where, at a UFO conference or something? I said, no, I saw you on board a craft. I said, really? Oh, that's interesting, because I have no conscious recollection of that. So I kind of blew it off. And it was probably a year and a half, 2 years later that a totally different person after the meeting came up to me and said, I've seen you before. I said, really? UFO conference? No. You were sitting on this bench naked on board the craft. You were freaking out. And they told me to go over to you to calm you down. Well, at that point, I decided to go get regressed. Wow. And, you know, try to find out more about what happened. Well, I had three separate sessions, and I had multiple past lives, but I didn't uncover anything along the lines of being on board a craft. Mm-hmm. However, again, after a subsequent conversation with the person, they said, well, perhaps this person tapped into a past life where you were abducted or you were taken and that you did have that experience. And so you're not remembering it consciously right now. That's why I say, you know, there are millions and millions and millions of people having these experiences. I firmly believe that the rest of us, whether we remember it or not, are having these experiences in one form or another, whether it's lucid dreaming at night, astral travel, all kinds of things that are possible when you start going down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I've been regressed. When I had the handprint show up on my body, and what made that significant was that it was upside down, elongated fingers, and this one right here was crooked. And it was very strange because it wasn't my hand. And of course, I had other psychics give me their theories as to what they thought it was. The one that I kind of believed the most, though, was the mantis being one, because I had been asking out loud for over a year, would someone please tell me how that handprint ended up on me and who put that there? And I had a dream. Now, I never had it before. I never had it since, but I had a dream of it looked like a human figured shape walking away from me, turned around, and it had the mantis eyes, and it had a black COVID mask over its face to try to disguise it a little bit. But once I recognized those eyes, I woke up in a pure sweat, literally completely full-fledged. My heart was beating out of my chest. I was scared to death. And I screamed out loud, actually. I said, don't ever do that to me again. I don't know what you're doing or why. But bottom line for that one, a psychic had told me that the mantis beings are supposedly, now, not all mantis beings and not all creatures or whatever you want to refer to them as are always healers or good. There's good and bad from what I understand. This one in this case seemed to be a healer because by chance, where it was positioned on my body was literally over a place where I had COVID pneumonia so badly that it needed extra help to get out. Well, it's gone now. It's healed. I'm healed. But the thing is that I think, in my view, that dream or whatever I saw was a healing episode from a mantis being, but scared me to death. What are your thoughts about that when you look back at all that now and some of the regressions that you had? What kind of conclusions did you draw from all of that?
Well, I think what I've seen and with some of the cases that I've been involved with is that there's an ability to manipulate time and space that is incredible. They can bring you back before they abduct you.
Yeah.
Type of a situation. There's been so many instances of missing time, aberrations in time, skips in time, all kinds of things that go on. And so if they have the ability to manipulate things in that fashion, anything is possible. Anything is possible. And so that's kind of where my head is at right now, is the fact that it's totally possible that that's exactly what happened. Each of the past lives that I had were so real, so incredibly real, and the emotions that came out of it, you know, how is that possible? Well, reincarnation, okay, is something that these entities talk about. And in my book, The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact, which is on Amazon, one of the people that is in our support group wrote about his experience and the conversation that he had with this group of aliens that talked about reincarnation is a mechanism of the universe. This is the way it all works. And so, and that's an interesting fact, you know, to come out of contact with these entities, that reincarnation is a process. That's an ongoing process that is part of how the world works.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about what most people are hear about most often, implants. Mm-hmm. Can you describe for us, if you can recall, where that implant was taken out of and what was concluded by it?
Well, these implants that are in my book, okay, are basically which the late Dr. Roger Lear had extracted from 17 different patients. And these devices comes in all types of forms, but they all do have a very common thread. And let me just read you some of the things that these implants seem to all have in common. One is that there's no inflammatory or rejection reaction by the body to these foreign objects. And, you know, when you get a splinter in your finger, your body reacts to it pretty quickly, you know, and it gets all red around it and everything like that. Well, these objects don't seem to foster anything like that. There's no visible portal of entry, which is a common thread. Collections of specialized nerve endings surrounding the object. An outer coating of ceramic biological material. A metallic phase where inorganic metal becomes biological tissue. The emission, this is interesting, the emission of radio waves, which are deep space frequencies in the FM band. So who's listening?
Right.
Who's monitoring, you know, us with this device? Mm. Electromagnetic fields in excess of 10 milligauss. Mm. Composition of meteoric iron 66. Rare earth metals such as U-236, a single isotope of uranium existing by itself, as well as elements such as iridium, which is very rare.
Right.
This one is really interesting. Non-terrestrial isotopic ratios indicating the involved elements did not come from Earth.
Huh.
And then, you know, all these debunkers talk about the fact that we do not have proof. Well, guess what, folks?
Mm-hmm.
We definitely have proof.
Yeah.
Gold spheres of unknown function. Metallic caverns that are no larger than a diameter of one atom. And resistance to all types of cutting tools. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And then these implants, most of the time, people do not suffer with these things. Matter of fact, most of the time they don't even know they have them.
Right.
But occasionally they do find out that they have them. And like in the case that the late Dr. Roger Lear was able to remove some of these things. However, we counsel against removing them simply because of the fact that 9 times out of 10, they come back and reimplant them in a place where you can't get to it or more difficult to get to it. So,
you know, one
if
of
it's
the,
not bothering you, let it be.
One of the, there's two cases that, one case that I know of is I know a woman right now who has one in her lung, and she had some kind of surgery done. And when the doctors went in to do whatever they're doing, they discovered this, I suppose you could say that it looked something like a mercury ball, a little bit like that. And so they were going to grab it to try to pull it out of there because they knew it didn't belong there. And it kept moving. And every time they went to grab it, it kept moving and moving and moving. So it's still in her. And I don't know if it's really, she didn't really say that it was causing her any grief or anything, but it's just the idea that there's a moving object in her, really small, the size of something like that looks like mercury, that is actually active and it has a mind of its own, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's an interesting fact that that's happened in a number of cases. Some of the cases that Dr. Lear got involved with, and matter of fact, Whitley Strieber, In the very beginning stages where he was contemplating taking this thing out, when they started to go after it, moved. Mm-hmm. And then he finally said, no, just leave it in there. And now this implant supposedly is communicating with him on a regular basis and has helped him write a number of books. So, I mean, he's getting that type of communication, which is very interesting.
Did you recall at the time anything at all about the saucer coming near to you, being over you or anything, or strobing you in any way? Or was it just the idea that you saw it and it was just kind of moving and drifting away?
Yeah, it was over this tree line that was rather close.
Yeah.
Where I was. However, subsequently, when I would go to bed at night, I would jam myself between the wall and the bed. And I've always wondered about that. Why was I exhibiting that kind of
behavior?
Activity, behavior. Yes, exactly. And the only thing I could think of now, you know, upon reflection, is the fact that perhaps there was something in my room at night that scared the heck out of me, and so I decided that was the best way to ameliorate that situation. I don't know. it's funny how these things all of a sudden pop up in your head and say, well, why the hell did I do that?
Did you ever have any x-rays or anything that came up where you have an implant in yourself, or any other knowledge about how many times you might have been taken or abducted without, of course, your knowledge? Did you ever go into that at all?
No, never had any markings on my body that were unusual. Most of them I knew what happened. And so I have, again, no conscious recollection of being taken at all. So it's a fascinating phenomena. There's no question about it. And you know, maybe whatever happened was traumatic enough that it got buried very deeply, or they caused it to be buried for whatever reason, you know, because I've always thought about why I'm doing what I'm doing now. Okay.
Right.
There's been a number of occasions over the years, that I've decided that, okay, I think I've had enough. I'm just going to back away. And then I start getting phone calls and I start getting people, you know, saying, well, how can I, you know, I need some help. How can you help me, and things of that nature. And so this is my job. This is what I'm here for. I'm here to make sure that Opus is a viable organization and that we're helping people. And I think we're, you know, since 1994, when we became a 501c3 nonprofit organization, that we've been doing a damn good job of helping people over the years. And we have three different ways that we do help people. One is that we have a totally confidential international online support group. And we have almost 400 people from around the world that communicate 24/7 with one another, talking about their cases, talking about their latest experiences. And we found that this seems to be one of the most positive things for these people, because they understand right away that they're not alone, yeah, that there are other people having similar circumstances, similar experiences with them. Then the other thing that we do is we do have a referral network of mental health practitioners and hypnotherapists, if that's what they're looking for. We can provide that kind of assistance as well. And then the third thing, which is a more recent addition, is our EST group, which is our experiencer support team, which is basically a triage team that has quite a bit of experience in a lot of these phenomena, and are able to talk to these people. So you're talking to a live person and finding out what it is that's going on with them and what kind of help that they're really looking for. Mm-hmm. And so we're, you know, and we have our website at opusnetwork.org, which has a lot of information. And we have, you know, a support button there where you can hit that. And we ask you just for very little information, basically how do you want to be contacted, whether it's by phone or email, and then a brief overview of maybe what's been bothering you, and then within 72 hours you will be contacted. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we really try to keep this thing as professional as possible, and make sure that we get to these people and give them the kind of assistance that they're looking for.
What are some of the more common cases that you hear about? And does it go in waves? Like something will come in, and then all of a sudden another, I'm going to use the word species, I'm not sure if that's really the right word, will come in. What are you seeing or what are you hearing from people regarding some of their experiences? Any cases that you can share?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we have done back in 2007 timeframe, we did a study where we took 71 people that claimed that they were experiencers, and 51 people as a control group, and we subjected them to a psychological battery of questions, and basically we found out that these people did not have a psychopathology. Okay, that's number one. Number two, that they were not fantasy prone. That after these experiences, they had a different worldview, that they came back with the idea that we needed to be better stewards of the planet. We need to be more loving to one another, be better to one another. I mean, these are all very positive things. We also found out that there was differences in temporal lobe activity between the experiencer and the control group. Now, more recently, we just finished the first phase of the Omega 4 study, where we went out to these mental health practitioners and hypnotherapists to find out what kind of modalities that they're utilizing to work with these people. But also part of that questionnaire was, what are you seeing? What are people talking about? Well, the number one thing that people are talking about are the grays. That seems to be, it's almost like in all these other, whether it's a mantis type or a Nordic type or a reptilian type or a tall gray, they all seem to utilize the short grays to do their dirty work. Mm-hmm. So there must be like this like an iPhone store, but gray store out in the universe where they all go and shop for these things. Okay, we'll take a couple of you guys, and then we need you to go abduct these people. But that was the number one thing. The second thing was orbs. Orbs seems to be a very, very common thing now, almost above anything else. And the third thing was interdimensionals. Mm-hmm. People talked about interdimensionals. And then the last thing is poltergeist activity. Yeah. And so there's an incredible mixture of these things going on that, and within each of those groups, you can have good ones and you can have bad ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like we have here on Earth, we got good people and we got some pretty bad people here that you definitely don't want to get involved with. Mm-hmm. So one of the stories that, which is in my book, which I talk about, is a couple, they were both amateur pilots and living in the Santa Cruz area. And they were picnicking at a state park north of Santa Cruz. And they were coming out, and it was getting to be dusk. And they noticed this light over the ocean, over the Pacific Ocean. And this light got bigger and bigger and bigger until it was literally over their head. And it was the size of a small Learjet, and it was a triangular shaped craft, mm-hmm. not making any sound whatsoever. And it went into this valley behind them, and they noticed another light over the ocean, and this light got bigger and bigger, the same scenario, until it was over their head. Well, the first craft, they felt it was they were looking at it. The second one, they felt it was looking at them, and they became frightened, and they decided to get out of there. But as they had that thought, it was almost like they became very robotic, and they started to feel like they were floating. Mm-hmm. And they started to go down this trail, which even during the daytime is a difficult trail. It's rocky, it's heavily wooded, but they felt that they were able to navigate this thing very easily, and they got to their car. at the bottom of this hill, and that's the last thing they remember for 3 hours. They ended up in a restaurant, which is normally about 10 minutes away from this area, and they had no recollection of how they got there. Well, after a while, they both developed a rash in their genital areas. And in this area, there's all kinds of, you know, poison ivy, poison oak, things like that. So they went to the doctor, and doctor checked them out and said, no, it's not either one of those. I'm not sure what it is. And they went to his doctor first, and then they went to her doctor, and he examined them and says, well, it's not poison ivy or poison oak, but maybe it's something internal, that it's a reaction to something, but I don't know what it is. So they took a picture of this, and they showed it around to the support group. They came to a subsequent support group, and almost without exception, they all had a very similar rash. And one of the people in the group says, I think I know what it's from. And so we said, okay, please tell us. And it's a reaction to the fluid that they dip you in when they bring you on board the craft to sanitize you. So that was a very interesting little factoid. And I have to tell you, this incident happened, you know, 30 years ago. I literally got a phone call about 3 months ago from them. And she now is remembering, things are coming back to her, and she remembers being dipped in this fluid, which she didn't remember before when we had that support group meeting.
Do you think that there's one type of species that was doing this dipping, or is that a common practice?
Oh, I don't know if it's a common practice. Actually, this is the first time that I really heard
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, what's interesting about the case is that they still don't have a recollection of what these creatures looked like. So it's hard to say. I would imagine that there's probably some kind of precaution being done, because we're just full of all kinds of fun bugs.
Yeah. You know, I have never heard of that until I was listening to your round table panel on a different show the other night. And when I heard that, I just kind of sat there and thought, I've never heard of that before. And a reaction to it and being dipped in it. And again, the reason why they were dipping was what? To protect them from the environment of going or being brought into that craft? Is that what the...
The feeling and what we were talking about, or this person mentioned what they were doing, was that it was a sanitization process where they were... You know, like when you go and you wash your hands.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was a whole body thing.
Yeah.
That was going on.
Yeah.
So to get rid of those germs or whatever they were concerned about.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that you mention that, I don't know. Things are kind of coming back to me. Not in terms of not me being dipped in anything. I'm just like, yeah, now it's coming back to me. Thanks for
wait a minute.
Wait a minute. What was that? I know exactly.
That was the hot tub I was in.
But you know, and there is something interesting about that though, because I think I heard this a long, long time ago. Something to the effect of, it doesn't surprise me, because I don't know if it is their way of not getting contaminated by something from our earth, or vice versa, or whatever. I don't, but I've heard of something like that before. And it's kind of, which brings me to the question of radiation. You know, you hear of people saying, yeah, I saw this craft and I went up and I tried to touch it. Or if they did, or they whatever, they got very, very sick. And some of them developed cancer and everything. What have you heard regarding the radiation that's being given off by some of these landing crafts or departing from a certain plot of land or whatever, and people actually touching this stuff without realizing what it could do to them? What have you
heard? Right, right. Well, as a matter of fact, again, you're a great straight person for me here, because that's in my book. I talk extensively about the effects of microwave energy, gamma rays, X-rays, that these craft are emanating. And it's dangerous stuff. It's very dangerous stuff. And so unless the ship is landed and their power source is not active, I would just stay away from these things. That's what we tell people. You know, you don't really want to get close to these craft at all, because of what is coming out of these things. And in many cases, a lot of the symptoms that people have, not just radiation burns or things like that, but hearing different things, the metal taste in the mouth, all these can be directly related to forms of microwave energy that can cause this kind of thing. So I have a chart in the book, The Unknown Other, that goes over a lot of these symptoms that people are having. And this gentleman by the name of James McCampbell, who I was very fortunate to actually work with when I lived in California, he's since passed away, was a physicist and at Berkeley. And he did an incredible analysis of the types of effects people were talking about, and then digging into the effects that either X-rays, gamma rays, or microwave energy can have on people. And there's a book out there now called Skinwalkers at the Pentagon by Colm Keller and George Knapp that talks about some of the effects as well that people are exhibiting. And some of it is related to not just craft, but orbs, where orbs have gone into people's bodies and created issues, but also orbs have gone into bodies and healed people. And that's another thing where, you know, I think Kathleen Martin had a case where she investigated, and this gentleman had cancer, and this orb entered his body. And afterwards, after, you know, going for his next chemo session, all the cancer was gone. So, I mean, these are incredible things. You know, the effects of being, you know, having an experience and then coming back with the ability to heal or to be healed has been really interesting types of effects.
What are people reporting about these orbs? Because I know for myself that they exist everywhere, but what's your thought on that?
I have a personal experience with orbs as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. I had gone out to Sedona, Arizona to meet with Tom Dongo, who's probably the preeminent ufologist out there. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I had lunch with him, and he says, "You got to meet this woman who takes orb pictures." Oh. He says they're absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. and the way she does it. And so I met up with her and went out to her place, and she lives right at the top of a canyon. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great view there, and we were sitting there in the evening, and so her the way she operates, she gets a feeling that an orb will appear, okay? Yeah. But not necessarily one that we can see with our eyes, okay? But with her camera, she had a 35 millimeter camera, old style, or not old style, but a digital, right, 35 millimeter camera. And she'd get a feeling that something was there. So I was sitting on the back porch, okay? And she went to the corner of the house and steadied herself and started to snap pictures, one right after the other, boom, 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 boom. She felt something was over my head while I was sitting there. Well, we got the pictures that evening, and I've never seen an orb like this. This was red. It was a red orb, but it had a little yellow cap, like a small little yellow protrusion. Mm-hmm. And every time she took a picture, that it rotated. Mm-hmm. Every shot, the next shot, it rotated a little bit further, the next shot a little bit further. She would also then take these orb pictures and blow them up. And this really blew me away, because one of the ones that she showed me, you could see typical gray aliens in it.
Mm-hmm.
You could see them, and it was like one was closer to the front,
mm-hmm.
and then there was some in the back that were looking in different directions.
Uh-huh.
So it was like a portal.
Yeah,
it was like a portal that opened up, and so they were able to observe us through that portal.
Right,
and in her case, she was able to take these pictures and show them looking, us looking at them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. So these orbs are, some of them are relatives that have passed on.
Yeah.
Some of them are more energetic in nature, type of things, whether they're interdimensionals, if you will, the conjecture can go all over the place as far as what they really are. But I think that what I've seen so far is that these are like little portals that are just floating all around, and that some of them have entities in them,
mm-hmm.
and others maybe just little tears in the universe of some mm-hmm. way, shape, or form.
Well, I actually managed to capture orbs flying around the room without somebody in that room, and I could never figure out why it seems to stop at the point where somebody has left the room. I don't know that. Do you have any thoughts on why that is at all?
I only could think of, and this is total conjecture, is that there was some kind of interest that these orbs had of that particular person, and then when that person left, they decided, well, we're leaving too.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing about this phenomena. There's so many questions that we have, but not many answers.
Right. Have you ever had any airline pilots give their stories to you in any respect?
No, but there's an organization that does have those kind of stories. It's called NARCAP.
Oh.
And Ted Rowe is the head of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And pilots have had many experiences, many, mm-hmm. many, many.
Yeah.
Some of them are absolutely, that Japanese cargo plane that was over Alaska and encountered this massive, massive UFO that followed them for quite a while. And so they had multiple witnesses, in the cockpit that were observing this thing, radar returns on this thing. And I mean, the bottom line is, yeah, there's something going on. There's no question about it. But you mentioned the term spirituality, mm-hmm. and I firmly believe that what's going on is a spiritual experience that people are having, including yourself, mm-hmm. Not in a religious aspect, but as an opening up of another reality that we're dealing with. There is another reality that we don't understand that is part of this world, and it's part of us, but we don't open up to it because we're busy, putting food on the table, taking care of our kids, or going to work, whatever. I mean, we all live very busy lives, and so that the majority of people don't have that time to sit down and contemplate their navel, so to speak. So when, as I mentioned to you, I believe all these experiences, including yourself, are going down a spiritual journey, on a spiritual journey, and that of realizing that there's other things in this world, in this lifetime, that is happening, and it's opening you up into a different way to look at the world, and probably you're a lot better person for what has happened to you because of that. In many cases, I mean, there are people definitely having really bad experiences,
yeah.
And that there's no question about it. But thank goodness it's not the majority.
What are your thoughts on why some of us seem to have experiences and others do not?
Yeah, I think what's going on is a long-term, a very long-term experiment that started eons ago. And it's following genetics and the manipulation of our genetics. And I think that because when you start talking to an experiencer, 9 times out of 10, you'll find out that either their parents or their grandparents have had experiences. Right. And it seems to run in families, mm-hmm. you know, and a couple of other things, groups that seem to have more experiences than normal are military type people. Also, the indigenous peoples seem to have a lot more experiences in that regard. Some of the latest studies that are Dr. Gary Nolan out of Stanford University, where they examined a number of experiencers and found that in the area of the caudate and putamen area in their brain, that there was a lot more connections in those people than the control group, and the ability that these people had with that physical characteristic was that they did have telepathic capabilities, they did have psychic capabilities, and that they connected with other people that had the same type of a condition. And then they found out that yes, their parents had the same thing, or their grandparents had the same thing. And so there's an evolutionary process that might be going on here, folks, and that those people that don't have that capability, we're just going to die on the vine, so to speak. And then this is going to be a whole different generation that is going to have the kind of capability that you have with regard to psychic abilities, telepathic capabilities, telekinesis type capabilities. I mean, this is very, very interesting because it manifesting in a very physical way. Mm-hmm. So no, I was going to ask you because you just triggered something. Mm-hmm. Did you have some type of a trauma that occurred to you, a physical trauma?
I've had many, I would call them many traumas throughout my life. I mean, everything mm-hmm. from nearly drowning to one of my siblings passing away as a baby to all kinds of episodes that continued to affect me in a way where it would be shocking or very traumatic.
Sure. And everything. Well, one of the things that you said where you basically had a near-death type of experience, mm-hmm. Let me just tell you a quick story. I got a call from the international director of MUFON one day when I was living in California, and he said this reporter would like to do an interview. Mm-hmm. Can I give him your contact information? I said, sure. So he came out, we did an interview, and subsequently a woman that read the article contacted me, and she says, I'd like to understand what's going on with my brain when I'm in contact with these off-earthly entities. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, well, I'm not sure how I could possibly help her. I was thinking that.
Yeah.
And then she said she was working with an emergency room doctor down in Carmel. And so I had a doctor friend, Dr. Eugene Lipson, who actually turned out to be the co-founder with me in the Opus organization. And he was always interested in connecting with other doctors that were interested in the phenomena. Mm-hmm. So I said, why don't we go down there and we'll talk to this lady and you can meet this doctor and we'll see what happens. So we went down there, we went into her house, and as we walked in, there was a picture on a wall. Mm-hmm. And it was her standing on the back of this, pretty large vessel, and in crystal clear blue water. And I said, reminded me of the Caribbean. And I said, what's this all about? Oh, yeah, I was down in the Caribbean there. I said, what were you doing? It says, well, I was helping these treasure hunters. I said, well, how were you doing that? It says, well, I was in contact with the captain of the galleon that had gone down. So that started the afternoon off. And subsequently, she was telling us things about ourselves that there was no possible way that she could know any of this. Mm-hmm. And then what we found out is after a near-death experience that she had, she became very psychic. Mm-hmm. All these abilities came forward. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many interesting connections with all of this, whether it's near death, whether it's poltergeist activity, whether it's Kundalini awakening, spiritual awakening, angels, demons, extraterrestrials, interdimensionals, you name it. It's unbelievable how much is going on that we just don't understand.
Have you ever found yourself being a lighthouse? Because chances are likely you probably have abilities that you recognize.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. If things are going on, I've had a lot of synchronicities. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
And you know, if I'm sitting here thinking about something, and I'll give you an example. Our website at opusnetwork.org, we just recently, probably about a month ago, put up a brand new website. And that website came about by a person that came to me. Mm-hmm. And the way she came to me was just out of the clear blue sky. Mm-hmm. She said, "My chorus told me to contact you." Mm-hmm. She calls the group that she's in contact with her chorus. Huh. Phenomenal talent, incredible talent. And she basically single-handedly put this thing together. And it's probably the best website we've ever had. And we've had multiple ones over the years, but this one is a winner. And I was thinking we needed somebody like that in the group. And all of a sudden she shows up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it goes on. I mean, I was married for 52 years. My wife passed away a couple of years ago from cancer. But the way I met her was very synchronistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I met her junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that there was this big, quote unquote, debutante ball kind of a thing going on at the school, or in the community, I should say. Mm-hmm. And so I heard some gal was going to be asking me out. And I didn't know who she was. I didn't know a name. I didn't know anything other than the fact that there's this rumor going around that this girl is going to ask me to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally found out a name. All right. But I still didn't know what she looked like because the yearbook hadn't come out yet or anything. So I didn't know what she looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the varsity faculty football game one afternoon. And I'm sitting in the bleachers, and all of a sudden I hear, "Oh, I dropped my shoe."
Oh, dear.
And a couple of rows up above me, this girl,
mm-hmm.
I said, "Okay, I'll get your shoe. Don't worry about it." So I go down, I bring the shoe up to her. It was her.
Mm-hmm. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of your book, and then how, sure, if they need to get a hold of you or see more,
absolutely,
information on you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Kelly. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. I just can't thank you enough to have me on your program. And the best way to contact us is through our website, which is opusnetwork.org, which is right behind me all over the place. And I do have a book out. It's on Amazon. It's called The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact. And basically, it goes over all the psychological, the physical aspects of what experiencers are going through. So I think anyone that is not super familiar with this topic would get a good read and a good background on what we're all dealing with here. So we look forward to, if you're looking for assistance, contact us. We have a support section on our webpage. And we are always, by the way, looking for more mental health practitioners and hypnotherapists, certified hypnotherapists, licensed mental health practitioners. So if you know anybody out there that fills that bill, we'd love to send them our way, and we'll hook them up to our referral network. And matter of fact, with all the things that are going on in Congress now, where they're trying to, you know, be more transparent, if you will, with regard to this phenomena, it's already starting to basically confirm the fact that whatever these experiences people are having are probably very, very true. And so I think we're going to start seeing a lot more people coming forward and looking for assistance. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that's pretty much it. You know, again, Kelly, thank you so much. It's really appreciated. And I thank you for the kind of shows that you do. And these podcasts that are out there right now are such a factor in making our communities more aware of these types of things that are going on, because that's what is needed. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing a great job of making that happen, Kelly. So thank you for that.
On behalf of the show, thank you so much for being with us today.